Behind the data glasses, Coda's eyes were odd and watery. Liquid, almost. Pale blue, watery eyes, rimmed red. They were so unnatural, she wondered if he'd had them altered. Little pinpricks of black in the pale blue iris. He seemed to catch her focus.
"I have allergies," he explained. "This dust," he shrugged. "It's hard to get relief here, even with the filters over in the Taiyang. Everyone cuts corners. They'd never get away with shoddy work like this in California. No one's really investing long-term, not even the Chinese. Not here, anyway. It's a doomed place, after all."
"I'm not taking money," Lucy whispered. "I don't want your money."
"That's good," Coda said. "I already paid you."
"Do you want me to stop writing about something?" She motioned at the computer. "Is that it? The water rights? The Pima tribe?
Can't you just leave it?"
He smiled.
"It's not what you write about that concerns us this time."
They both contemplated the laptop in front of them.
"It's this computer."
"You have it. Just take it."
"It doesn't have anything on it."
That brought Lucy up short.
"It doesn't?"
"Well, it's our company laptop," he said. "I think I would know quite well what's on it." "But that's what has the rights on it." Coda held up a crooked finger.
"Don't play us."
He stared at her.
"Where are our water rights? We paid for them. We want them. Rattan bought something, then he claimed he was swindled, but we know that's not true now. We know he had those rights. Where are they?"
She stared at the laptop and swallowed. "I thought they were on the computer." She swallowed again.
"We all did."
Coda's expression twisted. He leaned forward.
"I've lost people on this," he hissed. "Good people. You can't expect me to believe you don't have them."
"I don't."
"So, the rights evaporated? Poof, into thin air with them?"
His red-rimmed eyes blinked.
"I'm giving you one chance, Lucy, and I'd like you to take it seriously. You don't want your friend Timo to take your last pictures, do you? Down in a swimming pool all alone? You don't want it all to end like that, do you? You're an animal."
Coda pretended shock.
"You think I like doing this? I only want what James Sanderson sold us."
"And I told you I don't have it."
"What about the water knife? Angel Velasquez, does he have them? He's carrying them, isn't he? He has them with him somehow."
"He'd have gone back to Las Vegas if he did.
Unless he's pulling the same trick that Sanderson did to Phoenix and Rattan did to us. We've noticed a disturbing trend with these rights. Whenever someone gets their hands on them, they try to sell them off and make their own score."
"I'm telling you, I don't have them." Coda started to say something, then paused. He touched his tie, stroking it, a motion from his throat down to his chest, thoughtful.
"He's getting instructions," Lucy realized.
He was reading information coming in over his data glasses. Other people were in the booth with them, listening.
"Ah,"
he said.
"So then perhaps I believe you."
But he didn't stop eyeing her. Lucy was suddenly filled with dread.
"I should get up. I should walk away."
He was about to say something, and she knew it would be awful.
"I should go. I should run."
And yet she remained frozen, unable to resist the journalist's urge to find out where the story led.
"What do you want? What are you about?"
She was too attached. She'd been hooked ever since Jamie had told her about his scheme. However much she might lie to herself that she could still walk, or even run, away, she had to know.
"What do you want?"
she asked finally. Coda touched his data glasses. Lucy wondered what he was seeing and what kind of people held the leash on a monster like David Coda. Coda said,
"Let's assume that certain people I work with know a great deal about you. Your comings and goings, your associations, let's assume they know all about you. Much like a neighbor who watches your home for you, feeds your dog when you're gone, and warns you when you are in danger.
Sonny, is that another threat? He gave a sharp negative headshake.
Let's assume this is a friendly neighbor, someone who just wants to look out for you.
Again, a pause.
The water knife you're with, he said. Your neighbor thinks it would be good for you to bring him to a certain place at a certain time.
I won't do it. Coda went on as if she hadn't interrupted.
There's a service station right on the edge of the dark zone. You'll recognize it for the Mary Perry tent that's on the corner. A whole revival right there. All those Texans. All the locals they've converted here in Phoenix. Everyone singing and stamping and searching for their God's love.
I won't do it.
He wasn't deterred.
We'll expect you there tomorrow afternoon at, say, 2:15 p.m.
She had listened too long, she knew. She had to run. Right now. She needed to get up and run. She had to tell Angel and run with him. But Coda's watery blue eyes held her still. He continued on, inexorable.
I'm a little worried that we're not reaching each other.
You can't threaten me. I don't care what you do to me. You can't make me afraid. Not anymore.
Threaten you?
Coda's expression was bland.
Of course not. We're not like that animal who kidnapped you. We would never hurt you.
He leaned forward.
We like how your fingers tap, tap, tap out stories.
We're averse to breaking them. He reached into his jacket and laid a handful of photos on the table.
But this is your sister, is it not?
Lucy gasped. Anna, up in Vancouver. Photos of her picking up Aunt from daycare, buckling her son into their little blue Tesla, the day damp with gray clouds and verdant green trees behind them. More photos, a bit of Stacy in the frame, turned around in her car seat to watch as her mother secured her brother. The picture was so intimately close that the photographer might as well have been standing right next to Anna. Lucy could see a spray of rain on Anna's hair. Diamond liquid beads. Lucy stared at the photos, feeling sick. She'd lied to herself all along, pretending she could wade among the refugees and swimmers and dealers and narcos and not have any of it rub off on her. As if because she refused to look directly at the beast would agree not to look at her as well. But she'd been lying to herself. A girl in the bottom of a swimming pool became a cop shot dead in his driveway, became a friend dead in front of the Hilton, became Anna smiling at her children. Anna, looking so soft and safe and happy. Anna, who thought the vortex was far away, not understanding that the threads of the world were all connected, and that as Lucy was dragged down, Anna and her children would be sucked down as well. This was the illusion Lucy had been living under, the idea that she could keep herself separate. But as soon as she'd started filing stories with her name attached, she'd become another bit in the maelstrom, paddling just as madly as everyone else to keep her head above water and to avoid being sucked down for good. It had just taken her longer to realize it. Lucy swallowed. You're going to kill Angel, aren't you?
That's why you want me to bring him.
You misunderstand us. Coda smiled. We just want to meet. He's been slippery in the past, that's all. If you bring the water knife to us... He shrugged. Then you go back to tap-tap-tapping out your stories, and we all forget that we ever had this conversation. It's a simple thing. Almost nothing, really.
When Lucy got back to the flop, she found Angel sprawled on the mattress.
Well?
He asked, looking up at her. Her throat clogged. She couldn't find words. All she could do was stare at the bullet wounds and scars on his body. She remembered the Ibis man's comment.
He's been slippery in the past. Scars over scars, and now the new puckers of shrapnel in his shoulder. The wound that he'd taken rescuing her.
Well?
She could see his ribs, she realized. He was so very lean, nothing but muscles and bone strength. He was staring at her.
You learned something? He asked again.
Yeah, sure. She went to the water jug, poured into a smudgy glass that someone had left behind, furnishings that people had decided weren't worth carrying farther north. She drank, convulsively. The water didn't get rid of the parched feeling in her mouth. She filled another glass of water, feeling sick, not knowing what else to do. We've got an address, she said finally.
Oh?
She was surprised at how normal she sounded. She should have sounded like a liar. He was so good at his work, she was sure he'd see her lie. But there was no hint of nervousness in her voice. Nothing at all. This is what fear does, she thought. It makes you a perfect liar. There's a place where Rattan was keeping his work materials, some kind of safe house for the Callies, I think. It looks like the rights are there. Angel was already getting up, pulling on his ballistic jacket. She watched him dress. You ever get hot wearing ballistics? He grinned at her for a moment, looking young again.
You kidding? Rig like this makes the ladies all think I'm a badass.
Lucy made herself smile. He seemed to take it as an invitation. He came across and pulled her close. As he started to kiss her, she had a terrified thought. He knows. He has to know. She fought the urge to push away, afraid that he'd sense her betrayal. He kissed her again. Harder, hungrier, and suddenly she found herself sagging into his arms, kissing him back. Hard and desperate. Tasting his tongue. Running her hands down the plane of his stomach to his belt. Working the buckle. Suddenly crazy, suddenly frantic with desire. Everyone dies. We're all dead in the end, no matter what we do. There was nothing to fear. Nothing to regret. They clutched close, starved for each other. Starved to live a little longer. It doesn't matter. None of it matters. It's all the same in the end. Chapter 35. Maria lay in a cage, fetal around her wounded hand. The blood had clotted, leaving throbbing stumps where her pinky and ring finger had been. She wondered if the wounds would get infected, and then decided it probably didn't matter. She wouldn't be around long enough to care. The sun burned down on her and a steady wind scoured the vet's compound, adding to her misery. Sands whipped her skin. Her pen abutted the fenced area that the hyenas occupied, and the hyenas watched her, tongues out, intrigued after their first taste of her. Whenever she moved, they came loping over to snuffle at the barrier, returning again and again as if expecting her fence might prove weak. They were relentless. Part of her wished she could die of dehydration, be sucked dry and turned into a mummified corpse. Then at least the vet and Esteban and Cato would all be disappointed. She wouldn't be their entertainment then. They wouldn't get to see her screaming and running from the hyenas. She considered ways she might hang herself or cut her wrists and bleed out, but no tools were available.
Here, you should drink.
Damien, standing beside her cage, holding a bottle of water and a dish of food. This was the first time she'd seen him. Before, it had always been others.
I don't want it.
He sighed and squatted down, started pushing the food through.
I don't want it,
she shouted at him. The vet soldiers looked over. Esteban got up and ambled over, smiling. Damien glared at Maria.
See what you done?
Maria laughed. You think I'm scared of him now? What's he going to do, feed me to the hyenas?
The vet only wants you running, Esteban said. Long as you don't bleed out, I can do plenty to you.
Just leave her alone, Damien said. You already did enough.
I don't like how she's looking at me.
Let it go.
Don't tell me what to do, pendejo. I'll dump you in there with her.
Damien backed off. Esteban took the rice and beans and slid them through.
Go ahead, putita. Eat up. Can't run if you don't got your strength.
He waved at the hyenas in the pens.
You know how it works, right? We start you at one side of the pens, and if you make it all the way across before the hyenas get you, vet lets you out. If you're fast enough and lucky enough, you got a chance. But you got to get your strength up.
Maria glared at him, imagining him being run down by hyenas.
Come on, sweetie. You got food right there. Why don't you get your face down in it? Eat it like a little bitch.
She imagined blood spurting from his neck. Esteban scowled and walked away. Damien came back with another bottle of water.
Seriously, just drink.
Why do you care? Damien at least had the grace to look embarrassed.
I didn't think it would go like this.
How long until you feed me to them?
Next time vet feels like it.
He glanced over to where Esteban had rejoined some of the vet's other soldiers under an awning, playing cards.
He likes people to see you, lets other people know what's coming.
He shoved the bottle through the slot in the fence.
It might not be for a long time. You might as well eat and drink.
She considered rebuffing him, but some part of her refused to give up entirely, and her hunger and thirst won out. She drank greedily and ate the food with her one good hand, ravenous, unable to deny herself sustenance. Esteban came back over to watch.
How come you eat for him and not for me? You still mad about your fingers?
Maria paused to glare up at him. All she could think was how badly she wanted to see him dying. Screaming and dying to make him pay. To get a hold of his throat. She wondered if there was some way she could bait him into the cage with her. Some way.
Get out of here, Esteban, Damien said. You had your fun.
I don't think so.
Fun's just getting started, Esteban said.
He looked as if he were about to do something more, but then Cato called to him.
Esteban, we're gonna be late.
I'll see you later, girl. When I get back, we'll talk.
He ambled off to join Cato in their big black truck. They drove out of the compound, leaving dust clouds in their wake. Damien squatted down again beside her. A few feet away, the hyenas regarded her with interested yellow eyes, hungry and intrigued, unblinking. Maria wondered if Esteban had told her the truth, that she was allowed to at least try to escape, that there was even the barest chance.
What the fuck were you thinking?
Damien asked. Maria gave him a disgusted look.
I was thinking I needed to get the fuck out of here.
I thought you were a smart one.
Fuck you, Damien.
Hey, sorry. Just didn't figure you'd end up here. Thought you knew how to play the game a little better. Your girl Sarah, she knew the score. You should have stuck with her.
She's dead, Maria said.
Damien looked surprised.
What?
She goaded.
You didn't know that?
She played the game just like you wanted her to. We went out to earn just like you told us to, and she got killed. We did it like you wanted, both of us, and now she's dead. She glared at him.
And you set us up for that?
So yeah, I decided I'd run instead.
Damien sucked his lip. His tanned and burned face looking ugly. Maria wiped the sweat from her eyes. Her black hair felt hot and heavy with the sun. She was cooking out here. 120 degrees, and her out in the sun roasting to death. Damien looked guilty.
Help me,
Maria whispered to him.
How's that?
Let me out.
Damien laughed uncertainly.
They got the keys right over there,
Maria urged.
I've seen them. Tonight, you could let me out. No one would even know. And you know you owe me for getting me into this mess.
Damien glanced to where she indicated. The vet's shooters all playing cards, not giving a shit about anything except drinking tequila, laughing as they lost money to one another. He was looking at them, and she could almost feel him weakening.
You don't like them any more than I do,
she said. And it was true. She could see it in him. He was at the bottom of their hierarchy, skinny and tough, but not one of them truly. Just the boy who ran the horse for the vet.
We could both leave. We could both go north.
The connection evaporated.
I can't,
Damien said, shaking his head.
I try that, I'm in there with you, and we're both running from the hyenas.
They wouldn't even know. You could do it tonight.
But the connection was lost, and she knew it. Now she was just going through the motions. Whatever small hold she'd had on him was lost.
You owe me, she said. I'm here because of you.
Damien wouldn't meet her eyes.
You want I can get you some bubble?
He said.
Get you good and high. You dose enough, you won't feel much when they...
He trailed off, glancing at the hyenas.
When they rip me to pieces?
Maria prodded.
That what you're wanting to say? You want me to get high before I get eaten alive? You think that helps?
Damien looked embarrassed.
You want the bubble or not?
She just glared at him.
Sorry,
he mumbled. He started to turn away.
Damien?
He turned back.
Yeah? Fuck you.
Chapter 36.
Why are we stopping here?
Angel asked as Lucy turned the metro car into a beat-up gas station and logo mart.
I need some cigarettes, she muttered.
Didn't know you smoked.
If I survive the next couple of weeks, I'll quit. Again. Angel got out of the car, too, causing her to look back at him, puzzled.
What are you doing?
She asked.
Thought I'd look for some candy.
Seriously?
Sure. I'm hungry.
Angel wandered the candy aisles while Lucy bantered back and forth with the clerk about the various packs. No gummy bears. He picked up a roll of Spree and came back to the counter. Lucy finally chose Mist and a pack of Marlboro bubblegum charges for it.
Figured you'd roll your own, old school.
He laid his roll of candy on the counter.
I got this,
he said as Lucy reached for her wallet. Lucy nodded but didn't answer. She was looking outside, keeping watch on the metro car as if she expected it to be stolen. Angel swiped his cash card and got a beep of denial.
What the hell?
He swiped the card again.
Do you have another card, sir?
Angel looked at the clerk, thinking, I got about 50 cards, pendejo. But the fact that this card didn't work bothered him. He swiped again and got the same rejection from the machine.
Don't worry about it, Lucy said. Can you keep an eye on the car? I left the keys with it.
She pulled out a small wad of cash.
I got your candy.
Angel grabbed the Spree and walked back to the metro car, trying to figure out why his card was suddenly dead. The thing should have had tens of thousands of dollars on it. He thought back, trying to remember when he'd last used it.
2 days ago?
Before the Taeyang, for sure.
Dinner at the Hilton? Drinking with Julio?
Back in the car, he popped a Spree and sucked idly on the candy. Through the sun and glare reflections on the local mart's windows, he could just make out Lucy at the counter.
He liked her.
Liked how she moved, how she held herself. Across the street, the Mary Perry's had put a big old revival tent in the parking lot of a broken-down Fry's supermarket. People were holding signs in English and Spanish, promising bottles of water to anyone who came to a service and testified. They struggled to hold on to their signs as hot desert winds whipped around them. A guy off to the side of the parking lot was pissing into a clear sack. He finished and held it up over his mouth, sucking as he squeezed, looking like the happiest man alive. People started out squeamish about clear sacks, but eventually even the fussiest were grateful for them. Angel went through his identities in his head. If Mateo Bolivar wasn't working, he'd need to test his other cards. That, and get back in touch with SNWA to figure out what the problem was. Julio couldn't have known all his identities, so there wasn't any reason to kill the IDs and associated cash cards. Had to be a glitch back at SNWA. Fucking bureaucracy. Even from across the street, Angel could hear people in the Mary Perry tent, crying out their sins to God, making their offerings. Cheers and applause rose and fell. A couple people came out of the tents, clutching necklace tokens proving that they'd been on their knees, as if their bloody backs weren't enough proof that they'd been cleansed. Some people could never do enough to shake off their sins. They probably wouldn't be satisfied until they died of whippings. Dead. Why would his cash card be dead? Something about it felt wrong. It should have worked. His IDs always worked. Lucy was still inside the Locomart. She was looking out through the glass, looking at him. Oh, shit. Angel turned just in time to see a big black pickup truck pull up, gas engine rumbling. Another one roared up behind. Bullets blasted in. Glass shattered. Sledgehammer hits through him against his seatbelt. Pain. More bullets hit home. Angel tried to pull his ballistic jacket over his head as he lunged for the gear shift. He jammed the car into drive and threw himself to the floor, slamming his hand on the accelerator. The metro car whirred. His blood was all over his arms, all over the pedals. More bullets pummeled him. More body slams. Glass spiderwebbed and shattered, raining down on him. The car slammed to a halt. Airbags exploded in his face, stunning him. I'm getting blood on the airbag. Angel thought inanely, and then he was fumbling for the door, pushing it open, fighting past the airbag, getting the seatbelt off, flopping out. It was pointless, he knew. They'd be coming to finish him, but still he couldn't help fighting. He rolled over, blinded by pain, tried to get a fix on his attackers. The metro car had spun when he wrecked it. He couldn't orient. He squinted against bright, blurry sunlight. Where is everyone? He yanked out his cig, but his hand came up empty. He stared at his empty, bloody palm. The gun had popped right out of his grip. Slippery. He fumbled again for the cig, remembering the sicario so long ago, gunning down his target. He remembered it like it was yesterday. Remembered how the assassin had stood over his victim and pumped the man full of lead. Remembered how the body had bucked with bullet impacts. Angel finally dragged his gun out. He tried to get his arm to lift, trying to aim and be ready. The sun was right in his eyes. They were coming. He knew they were coming, just the same way the sicario had come. The sicario had stood right over the man and put a final bullet in his head. They'd come for him to make sure. Angel tried to listen for their footsteps over the ragged sobs of his own breathing. He remembered how the sicario had aimed his gun right at Angel, the finger of God, pointing, deciding if he'd live or die. Smiling and pretending to shoot, playing God. Gunfire cracked on the far side of the car, many guns going off. He lay against the metro car's wheel, trying to guess which side they'd come from. Fucking hell, it hurt. He wrapped both hands around the sig and tried to breathe slowly. Every breath hurt.
Come on. Venga, motherfuckers. Come and get me before I bleed out.
He hated the thought that he'd already be dead by the time they found him. He wouldn't even get a chance to shoot back. But maybe that was just the way shit turned out. You didn't get to decide how you died. Someone else decided. Someone else always decided. Someone was screaming over by the pumps. Some poor bastard who'd been caught in the crossfire. More gunfire cracked and chattered, accompanied by shattering glass. His hands were shaking, and he couldn't make them stop. He was dying. In a way, it was almost a relief. Ever since the sicario stuck his pistol in Angel's face, Angel had known he was marked. Death had picked off his family one by one, and now finally, it had come for him. There. The shadow of death. A man with a gun and tattoos all across his face. Angel squeezed the trigger. The shadow fell away, and the sun blazed upon Angel once again. Angel rolled, groaning, expecting another assassin to come from the other side. More gunfire ratcheted beyond the metro car, but nothing near him. He pulled himself up against the car's tire, hissing in pain. He stared up into the white-hot ball of the sun, breathing hard, sweating. He was supposed to be dead by now. So get the fuck out of here, pendejo. He rolled over and started to crawl, dragging himself across blazing concrete and broken glass. His guts felt like they were falling out of his body. His ribs were cracked and shattered, knives ripping his chest. He hauled himself over a curb, kept going. Just another stubborn motherfucker, too dumb to just let go. Too stupid to lie down and die like he should. Stubborn. He'd always been stubborn. He'd been a stubborn boy in school, in front of his teachers. In the ICE prisons of El Paso, stubborn in the juvie jails of Houston. He'd been stubborn. Stubborn enough to survive until Hurricane Xavier shattered the prison and let him and every other deportee walk out into the street in the middle of rain and flying trees. Stubborn enough to drag his ass all the way to Vegas.
That's why I let you live, the sicario whispered. Fuck you.
Angel kept crawling.
Watch your back, pendejo.
Angel rolled over, and sure enough, death was stalking him. He shot his killer in the face, rolled over, and kept crawling. The sicario laughed.
Qué malo. I knew you had it in you, cabrón. Even when you were pissing your pants with that little tiny dick, I could tell that one day you were gonna have some big fucking balls. Could see it. Huevos the size of balones.
The sicario continued to harass him, but over his jibes and jokes, Angel could hear whispered prayers. It took a while to realize that the ragged Ave Marias were his own, and even when he tried to shut up, they kept on. A liturgy to God, to La Santa Muerte, to the Virgin Mary, even to the goddamn sicario, who seemed bent on playing patron to him. Angel dragged himself into a tumbleweed-choked alley. His hands were muddy with blood and dirt. His shirt was soaking, and now he looked back and saw the long trail of blood that he'd left behind him. The gun felt slippery in his hand. He let it go, shedding weight, shedding life and death, crawling still. More gunfire cracked in the distance, but it didn't have anything to do with him. Not anymore. Angel found a shattered cinder block wall and hauled himself through the gap, grunting and panting.
Why do I even bother? He wondered. Just give up and die.
His guts were on fire. It would be so much easier to just lie down and die. At least it wouldn't keep hurting. Whimpering, he kept on.
I always was a stubborn little fuck.
They'd gotten him in the belly, he thought. Somewhere in the side, and it had ripped right through the ballistic cloth. Some kind of armor-piercing round, maybe.
God, it was hot.
He was sweating, The sun felt like a physical weight pressing down on him. God pressing him down.
Get up, man.
The sicario just wouldn't let up. Angel found that he was lying in red ornamental gravel in the backyard of some house. His face felt numb. He touched his jaw, and his fingers found bone. He remembered Julio's spitting teeth and wondered how much of a face he had left. Another round of gunfire got him going again, groaning and panting. Slower, though. Slower. The sun's heat sat heavy on him. He hauled himself forward. The sun blazed hard, heavy as lead, pressing him to the dirt. Through a veil of sweat and blood, Angel saw the abandoned house.
Just get to the shade. Just get away from this weight.
Once the sun stopped standing on his damn back, he could rest. With a final heave of will, he crawled forward. He found a handhold and pulled himself up and pitched into open air.
What the?
He tumbled, landing in a tangled heap. His arm was twisted under him and his legs dangled above his head, and all he felt was pain. Turquoise concrete ground his cheek. Swimming pool.
A goddamn swimming pool.
Angel laughed to himself. Just another Phoenix swimmer. One last insult. He tried to make himself roll over. Finally managed it. He lay on his back, breathing shallowly. Pain surged and receded with the slowing beat of his heart. His mouth was dry. He wanted to pull himself out of the pool, but the sides were too steep. He'd run out of energy. He was a bug, caught at the bottom of a bathtub, wishing for a drink.
It would just run right through you, dumbass. You got too many holes in you.
A funny thought. His body spilling water like a sprinkler. Like in those cartoons he'd watched when he'd been a little kid, where bullets didn't kill, just poked holes in a body. Off in the distance, the gunfire continued, sounding like a war. The world falling apart. He was glad he wouldn't be around to see it. He lay still, staring up at the sun, waiting for his heart to stop beating. A shadow loomed over him. Death, at last. La Santa Muerte coming to him. The skinny lady coming to gather him up. She had him now. Just as she'd had him so long ago when the sicario put his pistol in Angel's face. Angel was 10 years old again, all his limbs paralyzed. Death had not passed him by. She had only been waiting. She had always been waiting. Chapter 37. Everyone in the local mart hit the floor, assuming the gunfire outside was a drive-by. Only Lucy remained standing, staring at what she had wrought. Two big pickups had pulled up, one beside the metro car, one behind it, hauling clusters of men standing in the pickup beds with automatic rifles. They opened up on the car, peppering it with bullets. The windows of the metro car shattered. Abruptly, the car scooted forward, trying to escape. It accelerated, swerving, taking more bullets, then slammed into an old fire hydrant and spun to a stop. The two trucks cruised after it like a pair of sharks. Men hopped down, walking over to make sure the job was done.
I did this, Lucy thought. But that thought was accompanied by the knowledge that they would have done the same to Anna and the kids.
So why am I crying?
It was better this way. Lucy would walk away, and Anna would go on living her dream life in Vancouver. Aunt and Stacy would grow up never knowing that death had stroked their cheeks with cold bone hands. They would live, and Lucy would walk away. Lucy wiped her tears with the back of her hand. She needed to get out of Phoenix. Run, while she still could. She spied two men with pistols drawn, ducked behind the candy rack. One of them was talking on his cell phone. The other gave her a wink.
Don't worry, sweetheart, he drawled. We ain't gonna let this pass. When they go after one of us, they go after all of us.
He and his friend scrambled out the door and stormed toward the assassins, pistols blazing.
Texans? But I'm not Texan. The car. Texas plates.
The assassins scattered for cover, returning fire as the Texans dropped one of their number. Lucy had the sense to hit the floor as the Texans came diving back into the convenience store, whooping gleefully as lead poured in after them. Glass shattered. Bullets pinged and crashed through the store.
"That's right, you motherfuckers. You don't mess with Texas,"
one of them shouted. The other was on his cell again, calling for more friends and more guns. Across the street, Mary Perry's were pouring out of the revival tent. Most of them were scattering like cockroaches exposed to light, but some of them were striding across the wide boulevard, headed for the gas station, carrying rifles and handguns. More glass shattered as the assassins laid down fire. Bullets ricocheted. Potato chip and pretzel bags exploded. The Texas duo elbow-crawled across the linoleum, popped up to return fire.
"Go on,"
one shouted to her as they emptied their clips.
"Get out of here. We got this."
Lucy risked one more glance over the candy racks. The assassins were splitting up, some going for the metro car to finish Angel, the rest headed toward the store, crouched and shooting. None of them seemed to notice the Mary Perry's coming up behind them, opening fire. Lucy dove for cover. Bullets pounded the store. Strays buzzed like hornets. She slithered across the tiles, dragging herself through a litter of convenience foods. The other local mart patrons were already disappearing through a door marked Employees Only. Lucy reached up and shoved the door open, tumbled through. Gunfire pursued her, rattling loud. Back inside the store, someone was screaming. She bolted out the back and ran. Behind her, the gas pumps blew. The air shuddered, and a roiling black mushroom cloud billowed up over the filling station, flickering with orange flames. More gunfire. Pops and booms. The chatter of automatics. Lucy paused, panting, hands on her knees, staring back at the rising cloud. Sirens wailed in the distance. She needed to get out of here. She needed some place to hide. Her arm hurt. When she looked down, she found the hot furrow of a bullet trail running up her flesh. Blood trickled and dripped from her elbow. She stared at the wound, surprised. She'd been hit and hadn't felt it. Now that she was seeing it, though, it hurt like hell. She stripped off her tank top, standing in her bra as more gunfire floated in the blazing air. She tore a strip from the shirt and wrapped it around the wound, wincing. She didn't think the arm was broken. "Just a flesh wound," she thought, and had to stifle the hysterical laughter that followed. It hurt.
"It's nothing," she told herself. "It's nothing. You're fine. Just get out of here."
Talking herself through the panic as she pulled her tattered tank back on.
"Just get out of here. You're okay. You'll be fine. You did what they wanted. Just get out now. Just get out. Get sunny and get out."
The black cloud of smoke over the filling station seemed to be growing. She shaded her eyes, watching the smoke billow. It was growing.
"You okay, miss?"
Lucy whirled to find more people carrying weapons. More Texans. A lot more.
"I'm fine."
She clutched her arm, nodding, knowing she should walk away, but feeling her journalist's brain engaging instead.
"What are you all doing?"
she asked, as the Texans streamed past.
"Payback," a woman said, not stopping. "They took one of ours."
"They mean Angel."
Despite herself, Lucy followed. They reached the back of the convenience mart. It was on fire, blazing merrily, but its concrete block still provided cover. Heat and ash boiled over them. Lucy peered around the corner with the others. One of the pickup trucks was engulfed in flames. The assassins were pinned down. She could see Texans on their cell phones calling back and forth.
"What is this?"
"First Texas Patriots," the woman said. A couple men tipped their hats. "Giving back to the community."
The Texans laughed darkly, and then they were all slipping out from their places of cover, opening fire, closing in on the embattled would-be assassins, giving back for all their humiliations. In the distance, more sirens howled, police and fire departments responding to the black pillar of rising smoke. The winds were kicking up, and with them the fire. Sparks and debris rained over the neighborhood. A pair of trucks, loaded with gangbangers, came roaring down the street. They opened fire, dropping Mary Perry's as they skidded past the revival tent. The gas station continued to burn. Flaming debris filled the blue sky, raining down. A house across the street sparked a light, then burst abruptly into roiling flames. Another house went up beside it. Ash and flaming papers floated on the hot, dry winds. Lucy found herself wishing Timo were here to record this. He'd know how to capture this moment. A small spark, becoming conflagration, becoming maelstrom. From her vantage, she could still see the bullet-riddled metro car and its Texas plates. The spark. To her surprise, it looked like the passenger door was open and no one was inside. A body lay beside the car, but it wasn't Angel's. Lucy found herself hoping that Angel had somehow escaped. Even if Anna's survival depended on his death, she couldn't help rooting for the man. He was tough. Maybe he'd made it. If he does, he'll come back for me. The thought chilled Lucy, even as waves of heat rolled over her, searing. Gunfire sparked and popped all around, the gun battle metastasizing. Another house went up in flames. Hot air gusted, rolling smoke. Flames rose, roaring, crackling, rising higher. Without even realizing, Lucy found herself approaching the little bullet-riddled car, squinting against the heat and blowing dust. If he was alive, he'd come after her. He'd kill her. And yet still she walked closer. Fucking hell. A bloody trail led away from the car. Lucy followed it and found a second dead assassin in the alley. Her dread intensified. Angel had survived. She felt a prickle of superstition. Maybe he couldn't be killed. He had seemed bigger than life with his impossible tales of survival as he clawed his way up from Mexico and burrowed into Catherine Case's trust. Maybe he wasn't human at all. Some sort of unkillable demon. Blessed by La Santa Muerte, and unkillable because of it. With rising anxiety, Lucy followed the blood trail down the alley. His pistol lay in the gap of a shattered cinder block wall. She picked it up. It was slick with his blood, heavy in her hand. She squeezed through the gap in the wall. The trail led to the edge of a drained swimming pool. At its bottom, Angel lay in an expanding lake of his own blood. For a moment, Lucy thought he was dead. A broken marionette of a person, like so many other swimmers she'd seen in her time in Phoenix. But then he blinked. He raised a hand, seeming to point an invisible pistol at her, seeming to take aim for a second, before his hand fell back, limp. Lucy weighed his pistol in her hand. Finish it. Just finish it and be done. Instead, she scrambled down beside the dying man. Lucy? Shh, don't move. She ran her hands gently over his body. The ballistic jacket had taken a lot of the damage, but there had been too many bullets from too many angles for him to escape unscathed. One had grazed his skull, another his jaw. She pulled back his jacket, sucked in her breath. Blood soaked his shirt, oozing and sticky. She ran her hands under the jacket, trying to find the entry point. Angel groaned.
I thought you killed me.
Yeah, Lucy sighed. So did I.
Lousy job, those shooters, he whispered. Low rent.
Lucy found herself blinking away tears. The pistol lay beside her. One shot, and it would be done. I didn't have any choice. They would have done this to Anna. Putting a bullet in him now would be a mercy. Angel coughed.
Hey, Lucy?
Yeah?
Could you quit smoking?
That's not me. It's the fire.
A lot of fire, actually. Ash was raining down on them, black leaves of insulation and paper as big as her hand, and now when she looked,
she realized that flames licked the sky on two sides, and winds were gusting over them, hot and choked with smoke.
Lucy cradled Angel's head. The gun was right there. Why couldn't she just put a bullet in him? It would be mercy.
She was part of it. This was the maelstrom, all the evil of the world resting in her hands, all of it pressing down on her, pressing to make her another of its creatures, another agent of its horror, creating one more swimmer in a city full of them. Lucy got to her feet. She threaded her arms under Angel's and started to drag him toward the shallow end of the swimming pool. He groaned.
Ow!
Shh, she said.
I need to get you out of here.
He sagged against her, and she realized that he'd blacked out. Either that, or he'd just died. She kept dragging. It was like hauling concrete.
Why do you have to be so heavy?
She reached the edge of the pool, gasping and sweating, levered him over the lip of the pool, then got down to heft his legs. Up and over. She heaved and rolled him out of the pool. She climbed out, panting, dripping with sweat. Ash rained down on them. Angel lay still. Maybe he really was dead. She felt for a pulse. Nope, still going. She sat back, wondering how she was going to get him out of here when she could barely drag him out of the pool.
Lucy.
A whisper. He was awake again. She crouched down.
Yeah? How'd they get to you?
He asked.
Who'd you tell that I was with you?
I didn't tell anyone. They just knew.
They put some pressure on you?
Lucy looked away, unable to meet his eyes.
My sister.
They threatened my sister.
It's a good threat.
Smoke billowed over them. The flames were getting closer. Lucy was reminded of wildfires in the mountains, wildlife fleeing from the onslaught of roaring conflagration. And here she was, moving too slowly. She hoisted Angel up again, got him as far as the gap in the wall. Sweat dripped into her eyes. Dripped from her nose and chin, spattered his face. She crouched down, coughing and retching in the thickening smoke. Angel was looking up at her again.
Just go, he said.
He reached up and touched her cheek.
It's okay. Really, we're all good.
You can't undo what you've done. Not far away, a string of condominiums caught fire, roaring. If their stucco had been intact, they might have resisted the fire, but too many windows had been knocked out and too many doors kicked in. The whole area was a tinderbox. Too many bare studs exposed and too many nooks and crannies for fire and sparks to lodge and lick. The conflagration expanded, leaping from condo complex to houses to more complexes. Bone-dry desert winds caught the flames and whipped them higher. The roar of the flames was like a freight train bearing down on them.
Run,
Angel whispered. She spied an abandoned wheelbarrow. Cursing her own stubbornness, she ran to retrieve it. Her back protested as she tried to heave Angel in. The wheelbarrow almost tipped over, but she caught it in time, balanced him in it. The wheel was flat. Of course it was. Who would have bothered to pump it? Another house exploded, enveloped in searing flames that seemed to have come from within, all the wood roaring alive in a single moment as the heat surrounding it caused spontaneous ignition. Lucy grabbed the wheelbarrow's handles and started pushing Angel awkwardly down the street. More and more of the houses were catching fire. Blistering heat washed over her. Angel lay limp in the wheelbarrow, looking as if he were already dead.
I'm such a fool.
She spared a glance over her shoulder and redoubled her clumsy run. Behind her, a curtain of flame filled the sky, rising and hungry. She could run, but she couldn't stay ahead of the flames forever, and there was no way to get around them. Ahead of her, the subdivision road ended in a cul-de-sac.
She'd never be able to drag Angel through all the houses and backyards ahead of her and still keep ahead of the flames behind. With a curse, she set down the wheelbarrow and ran back toward the blaze. Small wickering fires were already starting, sparked by swirling debris. Lucy grabbed a piece of scrap lumber and shoved it into the flames. Carrying her makeshift torch, she ran back the way she'd come. If this doesn't work, we're going to be awfully well done. She ran ahead of where Angel lay like a broken doll in the wheelbarrow and started lighting new buildings on fire. She lit all the houses at the end of the cul-de-sac, running through the interiors, encouraging the flames, moving from one house to the next to the next. Flames flickered and grew, roared. She ran back to Angel. They were sandwiched now, between two rising walls of flame, one in front, one behind. The air was searingly hot. She hauled Angel out of the wheelbarrow, and they lay on the hot pavement together. She reached out and held his hand. A long time ago, she'd interviewed firefighters. It had been back when they still had some interest in trying to control the massive conflagrations that were engulfing the mountain forests. A wilderness firefighter had described how his crew had nearly been burned to death when a fire turned on them as they ran up a hill. As the fires pursued them in the grasses, he had the idea of lighting the grasses ahead of him. They lit the fires and fled upward, chasing their own burn, running into the blackened, fuelless land that they opened up. He'd saved his fire crew's life. The heat around them intensified. Beside her, Angel moaned. He'd lost an impossible amount of blood. "I am such a fool," Lucy thought. But still, she didn't run. The maelstrom turned people into animals, had almost turned her into the same. But now, finally, she thought she understood. The maelstrom of fear could drive almost anyone to become less than they were, to tear apart your neighbors, to string them up on fences. But now, finally, she thought she understood those few people who stood against narcos and cholobis, who stood up against money and water knives and militias, all the people who chose the right way instead of the easy way, instead of the safe way, instead of the smart way. She was in the maelstrom, and it didn't matter. She held the hand of the water knife she'd killed as the fires burned higher. She didn't run. Either she would burn here, a part of the horror she had helped create, or she would walk free of it, cleansed. The fires burned higher all around. Lucy's skin began to sear. Chapter 38. Maria smelled the smoke long before the fires came, but even then she knew something was wrong. She saw it in the way the vet's troops all looked west, and in the way they all started scrambling. She saw it in the way everyone stopped taunting her. Damien ran past.
"What's going on?"
"Big fucking shootout," Damien shouted. "Got to go put some Mary Perrys in their place."
"What's that smoke?"
Damien laughed.
"World's burning down."
A bunch of the vet soldiers were running to jump into pickup trucks, checking loads and automatic weapons. Men peeled out, leaving clouds of dust that blew away in the hot winds.
"Let me out,"
Maria called to Damien.
"You nuts?
Just throw me the key. Nobody will even know."
He glanced around.
"Throw me that key and call it an offering to the skinny lady. You're gonna go shoot people. You know they'll shoot you back, too."
The vet came out the front door of his mansion. Damien gave her a helpless shrug.
"Sorry, Maria, I can't."
He ran for a truck and hopped into the back, hunkered down as it tore out of the compound. The vet walked right past her and climbed into his own four-wheel drive. A minute later, the compound was silent, except for the snuffling of the hyenas beside her. Nobody cared at all about her. Smoke thickened. The sun set red over the flames. No one returned to the compound. More flames rose in the distance. Big old fire. The hyenas all stared at the fires, watching with pricked ears and twitching noses as smoke whipped over them. They prowled their pen, working it from one end to the other, trying to find a way out, Maria realized. Gunfire rattled in the distance,